On October 9, 2018, Pulitzer Prize-winning author and presidential biographer John Meacham delivered the 2018 Governor's Lecture in the Humanities at the Lead Center for Performing Arts in Lincoln. His speech was titled Tumult, Tragedy, and Hope, America in 1968 from a Half-Century's Perspective. Here are some excerpts from his talk, the first one about what was happening 50 years ago that shaped 1968.
If we had been here 50 years ago, in October of 1968, today, 46 Americans would have died in Vietnam. Not wounded, not captured, died. The year began with Tet, an offensive that pushed into Saigon and into the American embassy. We got to nearly 600,000 troops in the first part of 1968. It was a year, as we'll talk about, in which Martin Luther King was gunned down. Robert Kennedy was gunned down. Lyndon Johnson, who had been elected by the largest landslide in American history only 4 years before, was driven from office. Johnson had started his term in 1964-65 saying that these were the most hopeful times of the world since Christ was born in Bethlehem, which gives you some sense of Lyndon's sense of himself. The Chicago Democratic Convention disintegrates into violence. The year ends with the election of a Republican president over not only the Democratic nominee, but an independent candidate running on an explicitly segregationist platform who carries five states and 13.5% of the popular vote on a segregationist platform 50 years ago. So I'd rather be dealing with tweets than with Tet, all in all. Again, it's not to say sit back, don't worry about what's going on now. But one of the points of history is to create a sense of proportion, a scale on which to judge the relative urgency of a given moment. And so let's talk for a little bit about 50 years ago, and you can decide where to rank this particular moment. What I hope you take away is that the year was shaped tragically by men with guns, but hopefully and wonderfully by a spirit embodied by those men who were killed, about the enduring journey, about the fact that we are always called in this country to believe in the equality of opportunity and to seek our better angels. And they would have it no other way. And so the greatest service we can do to their memory is to embrace the struggles of the present with what Franklin Roosevelt once called strong and active faith.
Here, Meacham talks about President Lyndon Johnson's decision not to run for re-election in 1968.
No one in the loop in Lyndon Johnson's White House on the last weekend of March in 1968 knew what he was going to do. He delivered his State of the Union address with a piece of paper in his pocket saying that he was not going to run for re-election. He wasn't sure whether he was going to do it. He wasn't sure when he was going to announce it, if he did. He had been hit very hard by Eugene McCarthy in the New Hampshire primary. And on the 16th of March, emboldened by Gene McCarthy's anti-war campaign, Robert Kennedy announced in the Senate caucus room, where his brother had announced 8 years before, that he was going to challenge his brother's own vice president for the Democratic nomination. Bobby was 42 years old. Johnson, battered by the war, believes that the promises of the new frontier and the great society were irretrievably lost in the elephant grass and the humid jungles of Vietnam, realizes that he could force this through, but it was probably time. Lyndon Johnson was as political a man as ever drew breath. To relax, Nick Lemon once wrote, Johnson would call up and find school board races in Texas just to follow the results. That was how he unwound. It was an incredibly difficult decision. But the war was going to claim that casualty too. They scheduled a speech for Sunday night, the 31st of March. He spent that Sunday, he went to Catholic church, with a Roman Catholic church, with his daughter that morning. Terry Sanford, the former governor of North Carolina, was in the White House that day because he was going to run, be co-chairman of Johnson's campaign. Johnson dropped by a meeting with Sanford. Sanford left believing he had a campaign to run. When he found out later that night that Johnson had decided not to run, he realized that they had 15,000 LBJ and 68 bumper stickers to get rid of. But that night, in talking about the peace prospects in Vietnam, Johnson said, "I will not seek and I shall not accept the nomination of my party for another term as your president," ending in many ways the New Deal era in American politics. Lyndon Johnson had been a young congressman, elected in 36, under FDR, loved FDR. Hugh Seide, the great Time magazine columnist, once was with Johnson in the White House, and Johnson was rubbing a bust of FDR's face and said, "Strength, such strength in that face." He wanted to finish the work of Franklin Roosevelt at home. He wanted to finish the work of Lincoln on race, and in many ways had done so in 1964 and 65. But the promise of those years had been lost as the war spun ever more out of control. One of the signs that he would have to make the denouncement he made that March night had come when Walter Cronkite, on the 27th of February, 3 weeks before, had anchored a one-hour special called Report from Vietnam. And it closed with the now fabled commentary where Cronkite said that the best solution he saw was that it was a stalemate and that an honorable people should begin to negotiate. There is an immense amount of scholarly debate about whether Johnson actually said, "If I've lost Cronkite, I've lost Middle America." But it's one of those things that might be true without being accurate. That was a sign that the era of consensus that had been born in the midst of the crisis and the cauldron of the Depression, FDR shifting the role of government, affirming the role of the state, and standing for American interests abroad with a wary eye on the home front, including states like this, which were not eager to join the fight in World War II. Johnson believed that he could cement the Roosevelt legacy and push it even farther.
In this excerpt, Meacham talks about the summer of 1968 and the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
It was set up to be a remarkable summer in Chicago. That was Sunday night, the last Sunday in March. 4 days later, the preacher at the Washington National Cathedral on the Sunday morning Lyndon Johnson had gotten out of the race was shot down at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. This is what Martin Luther King preached on the morning of Johnson's getting out of the race. From the Canterbury pulpit of the National Cathedral, King said, "There can be no gainsaying of the fact that a great revolution is taking place in the world today. In a sense, it is a triple revolution, with the impact of automation and cybernation." March 1968. "Then there is the revolution in weaponry. Then there is a human rights revolution, with the freedom explosion that is taking place all over the world. Through our scientific and technological genius, we have made of this world a neighborhood, and yet we have not had the ethical commitment to make of it a brotherhood. But somehow, in some way, we have got to do this. We must learn to live together as brothers, or we will all perish together as fools. We are tied together in the single garment of destiny, caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. For some strange reason, I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you cannot be what you ought to be unless I am what I ought to be. This is the way God's universe is made. This is the way it is structured. 4 days later, he was shot down. Riots ensued around America. It was one of the most consequential 7-day periods in American history, arguably as important, I would say, as the period between Sunday, December 7th, 1941, which Japanese bombing Pearl Harbor, which ended on that Thursday, the 11th, with Hitler declaring war on the United States, and on the 12th with the United States declaring war on Nazi Germany. Close fight between those two periods for the most significant 7 days that changed everything. King's murder, he was 39, by the way, not yet 40 years old. The words in that sermon, the words that you know from the night before he was killed, when he said, "I may not get there with you, but I've been to the mountaintop. I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I've seen the promised land." That's the testimony we have to bear in mind. And it was a commitment to nonviolence in an era in which violence was so tempting. It would have been so much easier for Dr. King and John Lewis and Andrew Young to have embraced the more militant spirit that was on the side of the movement. But they did the rarest of things in a fallen world, in the political world. That's redundant. They stood by their principle. They had seen what happened. It wasn't pie in the sky. They had seen what happened. The Voting Rights Act was passed not least in the summer of 1965 because on March 7th, John Lewis and Hosea Williams were nearly beaten to death with network cameras running at the Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. That was the moment when Johnson said, "There are moments when the fate of a nation turns." So it was at Lexington, Concord. So it was at Appomattox. So it was last week in Selma, Alabama. If they had been fighting back, the moral high ground would have been lost. They were genuine martyrs. They were there willing to die for other people. As clear a case of martyrdom as St. Stephen. And they did it. Their strength was because they did not fight back. And they bore witness. Their protest from a position, the ultimate position of powerlessness, on the ground, on the asphalt, with Sheriff Jim Clark of Dallas County screaming for the troopers to advance on horseback with tear gas going and clubs. They were as powerless as anyone could be. But their powerlessness became the chief instrument of the deliverance of a people. And a summons to all of us, people who looked like me, from my native region, to understand that what Jefferson wrote was not limited, but illimitable. And we became stronger.
Again, author and historian John Meacham, who delivered the 2018 Governor's Lecture in the Humanities at the Lead Center in Lincoln.